Welcome back to our study of Deuteronomy. We are in chapter 31, and before we pick up with verse 16, if you'll remember that the Lord had told Moses that he was getting ready to die, and he told him to bring Joshua and himself and present themselves at the tabernacle congregation, that he would give them charge or give them a commission. And so Moses and Joshua went and presented themselves before the Lord, and the Lord appeared in the tabernacle in a pillar of a cloud. And so we pick up with verse 16. And the Lord said unto Moses, Behold, thou shalt sleep with thy fathers, and this people will rise up and go a-whoring after the gods of the strangers of the land, whither they go to be among them, and will forsake me, and break my covenant which I have made with them. Then my anger shall be kindled against them in that day, and I will forsake them, and I will hide my face from them, and they shall be devoured, and many evils and troubles shall befall them, so that they will say in that day, Are not these evils come upon us because our God is not among us? And I will surely hide my face in that day for all the evils which they shall have wrought, in that they are turned unto other gods.
So God is telling Moses what's going to happen before the Israelites ever go in to the promised land. And then he says, and he starts out, you know, my paraphrase would be, you're getting ready to die and rest with your forefathers. And then Israel's going to be unfaithful to God. They'll be pursuing gods of the inhabitants of the land where they're going. They're going to abandon the Lord God. And when they do, the Lord says that He's a jealous God, and His anger would be aroused, and many evils and troubles would come upon the Israelites, and they would come to this realization that these evil things have come upon us because the Lord's not among us. And the Lord said that He would not acknowledge them because of all the evil that they had done by pursuing other gods. In other words, you wanted to go that direction, I'm going to let you go that direction. So you don't need to cry to me to get you out. You want to follow other gods and worship other gods? Then you go worship other gods. I'll put you in countries where you will worship other gods. Now, that would be the judgment, you understand. The consequence of turning away from following God.
And He's saying these things before they even get into the promised
land. Before they ever cross the Jordan River.
Verse 19. Now therefore write ye this song for you, and teach it the children of Israel. Put it in their mouths, that this song may be a witness for me against the children of Israel. For when I shall have brought them into the land which I swore unto their fathers, that floweth with milk and honey, and they shall have eaten and filled themselves and waxen fat, then will they turn unto other gods and serve them and provoke me and break my covenant. And it shall come to pass, when many evils and troubles are befallen them, that this song shall testify against them as a witness, for it shall not be forgotten out of the mouths of their seed. For I know their imagination, which they go about, even now before I have brought them into the land which I swore.
You know, this is pretty incredible when you think about it, how the Lord gives Moses a song, which is going to testify against the nation of Israel for doing wrong, and they're to His instruction is you write the song and you teach the song. Not just write it, but you teach it. And it's going to be a witness against them. I'm going to take them into the land that I promised to their forefathers. And, you know, they'll prosper and everything's going to go well for them. And they're going to turn to other gods and start serving other gods and break my covenant. And then when the evils and the troubles come upon them, the song is going to be a witness against them. And their descendants will not forget the song. This is pretty interesting that God is using a song to witness against them. And then it's something else that is really incredible. God knows what they're going to do. They're going to turn away from him before they go into the land. Yet God takes them into the land, supernaturally works with them in defeating the enemy, knowing that they're going to turn against him. That's an amazing God, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Not manipulating, but a God that's keeping his word
right.
To Abraham, to Isaac, to Jacob. He's keeping his word even though he knows their descendants are stubborn and rebellious people. But he'll take them in. But he says, "Now you're not going to have an excuse. Come on, this right here is going to be a witness against you. And it'll be a reminder to you of what God said before you ever went into the land."
Moses therefore wrote this song the same day and taught it the children of Israel.
It's interesting, you don't normally think about teaching a song per se, but he's making sure that they know what this song is about. You know, there's a lot of songs you can sing, you don't even know what it's about, especially some of the modern day stuff, but this song has meaning. And what he's telling them is this not just a song you sing. This is a song that is a witness against you. And don't you ever forget it. You remember these words. Because there's going to be a time to come that this song is going to haunt you by telling you what's happening before it ever happens. So when you get there, you'll know that this is not coincidental. This is the judgment of God.
The other thing that I see in this, and it's so simple, that the Lord had told Moses, you write this song and you teach it. And that verse is so, it's short, verse 22. But he wrote that song that day. He acted on God's word that day.
Mm-hmm. And taught it that day.
Didn't delay, you understand. We can miss it when we delay. Verse 23. And he gave Joshua, the son of Nun, a charge and said, be strong and of a good courage, for thou shalt bring the children of Israel into the land which I swore unto them, and I will be with thee.
Now think about this. Joshua has heard what God has said, what Moses said. You understand, Joshua was with Moses when they went to that tabernacle and God met with them, okay? So Joshua hears what's said and he hears what the people are going to do. And then Moses says, the Lord says to Joshua, you be strong, you be of good courage. You're going to take these descendants of Israel into the land that I swore to their forefathers, I will be with you. I'll be with you.
And it came to pass when Moses had made an end of writing the words of this law in a book until they were finished, that Moses commanded the Levites, which bear the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord, saying, take this book of the law and put it in the side of the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord your God, that it may be there for a witness against thee.
So Moses is writing the things that God's spoken to him. And he's putting this in the form of a book, as it said here. And then he is to give the custody, give that book into the custody of the Levites. He didn't say put it in the ark, but lay it beside the ark. The Ark of the Covenant representing the presence of God, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, this song is right here. This book, all these laws, everything, this is here, and specifically this book of the law. This is here as a witness. Right here in the presence of God. You lay it up because it's going to be a witness to the Israelites. See, the Ten Commandments were put in the ark. This is laid beside the ark. This is the book of the law that he's written here. And it's interesting that he does this before he does, to where this new generation is without excuse. I can't say we didn't know. They have it right there as a witness.
For I know thy rebellion and thy stiff neck. Behold, while I am yet alive with you this day, you have been rebellious against the Lord, and how much more after my death?
You know, I think about this as what Moses is saying. I'm thinking about Joshua here and what Moses is saying. And Moses is calling them as they are. You're rebellious and you're a stubborn people. And if you've been rebellious and stubborn while I've been alive, what's going to happen after I die? You'll get even worse. Well, if you're getting ready to take over the position of leadership there, that's not really what you'd like to hear, is it?
Mm-hmm.
But he's laying the truth out on the line. I know what's going to happen after I die. You didn't listen to me while I was alive, and you definitely won't listen to what I told you after I die. That is shame.
Mm-hmm. Gather unto me all the elders of your tribes and your officers, that I may speak these words in their ears, and call heaven and earth to record against them. For I know that after my death, ye will utterly corrupt yourselves and turn aside from the way which I have commanded you, and evil will befall you in the latter days, because ye will do evil in the sight of the Lord, to provoke him to anger through the work of your hands.
Now, if I understand this correctly, if you think back a few verses, Moses has been told to assemble everybody. Now this appears to be a different assembly. All right, I've spoken to the nation. Now I want to speak to the leaders.
Yeah.
And so he assembles the leaders of the tribes and the officials to speak directly to them and to tell them that heaven and earth is going to be a witness against them that you spoke the words. And I know after I die, you're going to become very corrupt. I'm going to stop following the commandments of God that I've given to you. And when you do, evil is going to come upon you. And it'll be the judgment of God because of your evil deeds. And so the leaders are without excuse. You understand? And as the leaders go, so goes the nation. You understand? And so he's dealing directly with the leaders and making sure that they know this law is going to be a witness against you.
Verse 30, and Moses spake in the ears of all the congregation of Israel the words of this song until they were ended.
So Moses lays out the words of the song. Now, when we go into the next chapter, you're going to get the words of the song. And I want you to pay particular attention. This is an extremely unusual song. When you look at the lyrics, if you will.
Mm-hmm. So let me give you an introduction here. This song is a prophetic song. And it was given, as you remember, to Moses by God to serve as a witness for God against the descendants of Israel. It records God's instruction for Moses to go to Mount Nebo to die. Now let's look at verse 1. Give ear, O ye heavens, and I will speak, and hear, O earth, the words of my mouth.
So this is how the song starts out. Pay attention. Heaven, I'll speak. Pay attention, earth. Listen to the words that's coming out of my mouth. I want you to think about this in light of some things that we've been talking about, how everything's done by words. Mm-hmm. These words are going out as a witness. Okay? And let me say this. The instruction for Moses to go to Mount Nebo and die is not in the song. Mm-hmm. That's in the chapter. Okay, so don't confuse that. Okay.
Verse 2. My doctrine shall drop as the rain. My speech shall distill as the dew, as the small rain upon the tender herb, and as the showers upon the grass.
In other words, this is going to saturate. Mm-hmm. My instructions will drop like rain. My words are going to fall like dew. And they'll be like showers on young plants and rain on grass. In other words, everybody's going to get the effect of my words.
Because I will publish the name of the Lord, ascribe ye greatness unto our God.
That's good.
Yeah.
That's what we're singing, right?
Yeah.
I will call aloud the name of the Lord and acknowledge God's greatness. They're learning the song. Isn't that amazing?
It is. He is the rock. His work is perfect, for all his ways are judgment. A God of truth and without iniquity, just and right is he.
So this is going to be a witness. Here you are singing. He's a rock. His works are complete. His methods are just. He's a faithful God. There's no evil in him. He is just and righteous. That's coming out of their mouth. The one that they're going to turn away from. Isn't that amazing?
Mm-hmm. They have corrupted themselves. Their spot is not the spot of his children. They are a perverse and crooked generation.
And so, they're singing this to themselves, to the nation. They've corrupted themselves. They're not his children any longer because of their faults. They're perverted. They're deceitful. And you're singing that over yourself as a witness.
That's terrible. Sorry. Verse 6. Do ye thus requite the Lord, O foolish people and unwise? Is not he thy father that hath brought thee? Hath he not made thee and established thee?
I mean, get the picture of this. You're singing this. You know, you're singing this to yourself. You're singing this to others. You wicked and unwise people. Think about that. Is this the way you treat the Lord? Is he not your father? Is he not your creator? Is he not the one who prospered you? What a witness.
Wouldn't you want to do right if somebody said that to you? I'd want to do right. I'd want to straighten up. But verse 7, remember the days of old. Consider the years of many generations. Ask thy father, and he will show thee, thy elders, and they will tell thee.
Remember the days of old. Consider all these years, all these generations. Ask your fathers, forefathers, or whatever. Ask your father. He'll explain it. The elders will tell you. The people don't want to go back and ask the fathers. It's an amazing thing. I was thinking today concerning history, how this younger generation today does not really know the true history of this nation. They know a fabricated history. They don't know the truth. They've been lied to. They haven't gone in and asked because they don't respect the older generation anymore. You're in a generation now that thinks they know it all. We're smart. We don't need your advice. And that just shows how ignorant you are. When you think you don't need advice, you're just revealing your ignorant sin. I need advice. I'm going to tell you right now, at my age, I still draw off of the wisdom of my dad. That, you know, when I go back to that generation and you go all the way back to World War II, which he was in World War II, I think of the wisdom and the ethics of that generation. And there's so much to draw from. But people today don't want to hear about it. You understand? We think we have a better idea. Well, we need to start singing some songs. You with me? Okay.
And when the Most High divided to the nations their inheritance, when he separated the sons of Adam, he set the bounds of the people according to the number of the children of Israel.
So think about it. God gave to Israel other nations as an inheritance. He made a distinction between the descendants of Adam. You understand, Adam had a lot of descendants on earth at that particular time. God made a distinction. He chose one man, and from that one man, they formulated a nation and chose that nation to be unlike any other nation on earth. So they are a select people, if you think about it. He set the boundaries of their inheritance according to the numbers of the tribes of Israel. He allotted the land. Now, actually, you see this, and if you go through the scriptures, if you want to know what the boundaries of Israel are and all the stuff that they're fighting over, you'll find that what God gave Israel, other nations are occupying now. Israel does not have all the territory that God gave them now. And the thing that's going on right now that they're fighting for, and people say they're taking their land, actually is the land God gave to Israel that was stolen from them. You understand? And so if you want to know what the boundaries is, look in the scriptures. That's the boundaries. And God gave it to them. But they lost it all for many, many years. And never have regained it all back yet. Why? Because they turned away from God.
For the Lord's portion is his people. Jacob is the lot of his inheritance.
Now think about it. The Lord's allotment, what the Lord received, was the tribes of Jacob. We think about our inheritance. No, this is what God, out of all the nations on earth, God got these tribes of Jacob. He chose them as an inheritance. But isn't it amazing what he inherited didn't like their master? So many people today are the same way.
He found him in a desert land, and in the waste howling wilderness he led him about, he instructed him, he kept him as the apple of his eye.
And so he found him in an undesirable condition, didn't he?
Mm-hmm.
And what did he do? He protected them. He gave them understanding. They were the center of his attention. When it talks about the apple of the eye, it's talking about the center of his attention. Israel is still the center of attention because God has things to still be fulfilled in Israel. You understand? And they will come to pass. God's not slack. God's not powerless. But he does everything in the fullness of time. It'll be his timetable, not ours.
As an eagle stirreth up her nest, fluttereth over her young, spreadeth abroad her wings, taketh them, beareth them on her wings. So the Lord alone did lead him, and there was no strange God with him.
So he's speaking metaphorically here, but what he's saying is God set them on high, gave them produce, and they prospered. You understand, they weren't lacking. anything. I mean, God was taking care of them.
He made him ride on the high places of the earth, that he might eat the increase of the fields, and he made him to suck honey out of the rock, and oil out of the flinty rock.
Now you think about this, when God brought them out, when God set them in the high places, so to speak, and separated Israelites, God led them, they didn't have other gods. So you couldn't say some other God's doing it. God was doing all this, and he blessed them, he prospered them. But isn't it amazing how you can forget the God who has given you everything you have? That's what happened to this nation. That's why the nation got into such bad shape that it's in today. It forgot its God. World War II, it knew its God. You understand? People today, so many of them don't even go to church. They don't know anything about God, what somebody else told them. They don't know God by experience. And sadly, many people who attend church don't know God by experience. They know about him. There's a difference between knowing about and knowing. Israel had experienced God. That's the amazing thing. They'd experienced the blessings of God. They'd experienced the protection of God. They'd seen supernatural miracles by God. You'd think, man, that would get your attention. You don't see supernatural miracles out of idols. You go in and you defeat the enemy that's worshiping other gods. You defeat them. You destroy their gods. And then you end up turning around worshiping the gods that couldn't even defend themselves. And we call ourselves smart. That was pretty stupid, then.
Butter of kine and milk of sheep with fat of lambs and rams of the breed of Bashan and goats with the fat of kidneys of wheat. And thou didst drink the pure blood of the grape.
They're singing this. You understand? What they're singing, they're reminding themselves in this song how God had prospered them. Mm-hmm. You know, well, we ate the best of the land and the fat of the flocks and all this type stuff. And man, we were riding high, is the essence of it. They're singing this thing to themselves. That's why he says this song is a witness against them. You're without excuse, in other words.
But Jeshuan waxed fat and kicked. Thou art waxen fat. Thou art grown thick. Thou art covered with fatness. Then he forsook God, which made him, and lightly esteemed the rock of his salvation.
So Jeshurun is an epithet for Israel, okay? Israel excelled. Israel conquered when they went into these lands. The nation was distinct. It was a distinguished nation, heavily populated. And when Israel became prosperous, the people rejected the God who made them prosperous. And they despised the rock that saved them. Doesn't even make sense, does it?
They provoked him to jealousy with strange gods. With abominations provoked they him to anger.
So God became jealous of these foreign gods, these idols, and these idols that Israel started worshiping made God angry.
They sacrificed unto devils, not to God, to gods whom they knew not, to new gods that came newly up, whom your fathers feared not.
They sacrificed to demons.
Well,
if it's not the true God, then you're sacrificing to demons. You're worshiping devils. There is no in-between. You're either following God, and if you're not following God, you're following the devil. I don't care what form of religion it may be. It's demonic. You understand? And this is what he's saying. They sacrifice to devils, demons, not God. They offered sacrifices to God. They didn't know. Their forefathers didn't even know the gods they were worshiping. And their ancestors didn't bring these gods into the land. And their ancestors didn't fear these gods. They just thinking they have a better idea and going in a wrong direction and actually pervert an entire nation. Sounds like today. Coexist, my God doesn't coexist. So don't you hand that junk to me. Okay? There's one God. It's not you, and it's not these idols. It's the Creator God, Jehovah God. That's the true God. That's the only living God. I was thinking today as I was driving in here this morning, how there's no other religion that can truthfully say their God lives in them. But we, as born-again believers, have the Spirit of God residing on the inside of us. God has taken up His abode in our hearts. We're actually even called the temple of God. We talk about church, you know, buildings and all that, but in reality, the church, from God's perspective, is the body of Christ. It is called out from all these other religious settings. It's a people who have their attention on God. It's a people who are in relationship with a person, not a system. Amazing, isn't it?
Verse 18, of the rock that begat thee, thou art unmindful, and hast forgotten God that formed thee.
Isn't that amazing? They didn't remember the rock from which they were hewn. Where did you come from? Who birthed you into a nation? You couldn't do it. God supernaturally did it. While they're in Egyptian bondage, God moves on the heart of a shepherd to send him into Egypt to deliver them. They couldn't deliver themselves. None of them had clout with Pharaoh. None of them could go into the presence and say, this is going to happen if you don't do this. But they forgot the God who actually birthed them as a nation.
And when the Lord saw it, He abhorred them because of the provoking of His sons and of His daughters.
You know, I think of the United States of America. There's such a parallel between this nation and the nation of Israel. This nation was birthed from another nation. And a lot of people haven't come to grips with the thing that we were delivered from the bondage of England. That's what the Revolutionary War was about to those who've ever had it taught. This is how this nation got its independence. And not to be independent of God, but to be dependent upon the God who made them independent. You understand? It wasn't that we had greater forces than Europe. God fought for the nation. And it was God who gave us our independence in this nation. God gave us the land. We come to this land with a freedom of religion. And what that means is not the way it's interpreted. What that simply means is the king can't tell you you got to follow the Anglican Church or the Church of England. The Pope can't tell you you have to follow the Church of Rome. You have the right to worship God in the way that you know to worship God. You understand? That's what freedom of religion is. It's not to where you're free to worship any old God you want to. No, God never intended for other gods to come on this land. just like he did not intend for other gods to be incorporated into Israel's worship. And so that's a misinterpretation. They don't know the heart of the forefathers. The forefathers, although they weren't perfect men, they were God-fearing men. They feared God, the Creator God, is who they feared. You understand? But isn't it amazing how quickly you can forget where you came from? And then the consequence that follows that. And so I look at us and I look at Israel and I think, you know, we have history right here. Why repeat the history? Why not learn from the history that we have here and see the importance of putting our undivided attention on God, not looking to the left or the right, not looking for government to support you. God never intended for the government to be the attention of the nation of Israel. He didn't even want them to have a king. He wanted to be their king. What he wanted them to do was just follow me. I would give you my direction. I can do it through a prophet. I can do it through a judge. I don't need a king. I don't want you to be like other nations. But what does man say? We want to be like everybody else. What amazes me about America, we were delivered from England, and today we want to act like the one we were delivered from. Look at them. How did it go for them? It's a nation that's not Christian anymore. And that's where the direction we were going. But thank God I'm seeing some turn. I'm hearing God's name, and not in vain, but in actually an exaltation to God. Time's up here, so we're going to have to stop and take your break, okay?